Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Current Issues. I'm your host, Hisham Tilawi. We're coming to you live from the Republic Broadcasting Network. And I'm going to make a few comments about Virginia Tech. I'm sure you're tired of hearing 24 hours coverage of what went on. But we're not going to cover it as the news media covers it, and that's not what we're going to talk about. I'm just going to make a couple of comments on that today, and then we will be speaking with Lenny Brenner about what is going on in the Middle East and what is going on. But let me make a few comments about the Virginia Tech. Number one, it is what happened is sad, it is shocking, and it's a tragedy. And I don't know how you feel about how the media had covered that.
Okay.
And what went... Am I up? You going to play music or no? Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Current Issues. I'm your host, Hisham Tilawi. Well, today, ladies and gentlemen, we have lots to talk about. Of course, the Middle East is our favorite subject. And in the first hour, I'm going to have one of the greatest people who actually covered the war in Iraq. My guest in the first hour is Daher Jamel. Daher went to Iraq because he felt that the United States media will not accurately report on the realities of the war in Iraq for the Iraqis and for the United States soldiers. His dispatches were quickly recognized as an important media resource. He's now writing for the Interpress Service, the Asia Times, and many other outlets. His reports have also been published with The Nation, The Sunday Herald, Islam Online, The Guardian, Foreign Policy in Focus, and The Independent, just to name a few. And as a matter of fact, Daher had joined us about three or four times on Current Issues, the TV show. And we will be speaking with Daher today. He just conducted an interview with a senior Ba'ath party, that is the party of Saddam Hussein. But before I go to Daher, I just wanted to mention a couple of things that are in the news now. As most of you have heard, that Harry Reid, he mentioned last week that the war was lost. And also General Petraeus with Jamie McIntyre of CNN in an interview, he repeated again that there is no military solution to the war in Iraq. And I'm just wondering, you know, if with Harry Reid saying that we lost the war, I'm just wondering what was the war that we were supposed to win. Do we even know exactly what are we supposed to win there? And also there's the book by George Tenet. You know, I hate these kiss and tell books. Because, you know, what George Tenet should have done from the beginning, if he did not like what was going on, he should have said so right then and there. But I don't want to leave my guest waiting. I know the break is coming up, the first break is coming up shortly, but let me go directly to Daher. Daher, welcome to the program.
Hi, good to be here.
Great. Now Daher is joining us from Beirut, Lebanon. Where he's doing a lot of work in the area there. He spoke in Doha, Qatar, and among other places. Daher, just a quick question. What are you doing there in Lebanon?
Well, I've been in Lebanon for a little over a week now after being in Syria for a couple of weeks. And here in Lebanon, I'm primarily focusing on the current political situation, which is very tense. The government's in gridlock, but also focusing on the South and what happened in Lebanon during the war here about 8 months ago, the Israeli assault on Lebanon. So I went down south with a photographer friend, and we documented Both what happened during the war, doing follow-up stories, as well as what's happening now as far as reconstruction and the sentiment of the people down there.
Now, Daher, I know most of your concentration was on Iraq, and if it wasn't for the Iraq war, you probably would not be in the situation you are in. Are you shifting gears here? Are you getting away from covering the Iraqi situation?
Well, I haven't been able to go back into Iraq because of the security situation, and since I don't embed, working on the streets the way I used to has become impossible. So I'm still following it closely, using some of my sources in the country, but since I can't go in there personally, I've decided to expand coverage and cover other hot spots like Lebanon and Syria and basically anything else that comes up, and perhaps a different area over here in the future.
Tell me, anybody has any clue to what we are doing in Iraq or what the solution might be for the Iraqi situation?
Well, unfortunately, the people that do have a clue and do know the solution, which is total, unconditional, immediate withdrawal, paying full compensation to Iraqis who've suffered through this, as well as the sanctions that preceded the war, and then get the soldiers home and take care of them with, of course, the suffering and damage done to them as well. The people that do know this solution are unfortunately not in positions of power in our own government. So a couple of the candidates running for the Democratic nomination, but because of funding and the way our political system is set up, basically have no chance to gain a position of power. But certainly no one in a position of power, or none of the mainstream Democratic candidates would agree with my solution.
You're talking about Dennis Kucinich, one of them?
He would be, yeah. I mean, he's one of the few that actually is calling for these exact things with no question about it, total unconditional withdrawal, no strings attached, paying full compensation, really voicing the program, which is exactly what the Iraqi people want.
Okay. General Petraeus, David Petraeus, was with Jamie McIntyre in an interview, and he mentioned how good they have done in the Anbar province, where they basically got rid of or neutralized al-Qaeda there. Is al-Qaeda really big in Iraq?
Al-Qaeda definitely has a presence now. It's worth noting anytime we talk about this that they had zero presence whatsoever before the invasion occurred. But now they have moved into certain areas and taken control of it. And in fact, I would definitely contradict or I would say refute the statement made by General Petraeus that things are getting better in Al-Anbar regarding the situation of the resistance as well as terrorist groups operating there. That's simply not true. The U.S. military doesn't have control over anything in Iraq anymore, and that includes the so-called Green Zone. We saw what happened there just a couple of weeks ago in the Ministry of Parliament, where a bomb was detonated, killing at least two people. But there are total towns in different parts of Iraq now that are under total control of al-Qaeda. Bakuba would be one of them. While it's not in Al-Anbar province, it's about 30 miles to the northeast of Baghdad. But I have sources there that are saying the opposite, that actually al-Qaeda is in majority control of the city, and the U.S. military is actually not taking very great strides to try to stop them.
Now, explain something to me. I'm really having a problem understanding al-Qaeda. Who is al-Qaeda the same one that we talk about when we talk about bin Laden? Is that the same group?
In this instance, it gets a bit shady, of course, in Iraq, because there are groups that will claim that, and then there's other groups, and it is true, and then there are other groups that will claim that, and they certainly don't have that affiliation whatsoever. The thing that's gotten so muddled in Iraq now is that there are so many different resistance groups. You mentioned at the top of the show that I'd interviewed a high-ranking member of the Ba'ath Party, and he says that the vast majority of the resistance are ex-Iraqi army personnel. And I do believe that, but that said, even he agreed with me that there are numerous other resistance groups operating in Iraq, and some of them have no affiliation with anyone whatsoever other than themselves. So some of these are just local homegrown resistance small groups, not affiliated with anyone else. Others are people who have come in from outside the country. But that said, it should also be noted that even according to the U.S. military, of all the groups attacking them inside of Iraq, their highest estimate is that 6% of those groups are from outside of the country.
I was going to get to the interview you made with Badi Arif Azat. Tell me, who's this guy is? You're calling him a senior Ba'ath Party member. Who is he? And what position did he take under the Saddam regime?
Actually, the Ba'ath Party member that I interviewed, I left him nameless. That was one of the conditions of the interview. The Badi Arif Azat is actually the chief attorney of the Anfal defense, which is in court right now in Iraq as part of the leftover of these trials being conducted against people associated with the former regime in Iraq. Badi Arif is also the lead lawyer for the highest-ranking Christian member of Saddam Hussein's regime, Tariq Aziz, his deputy secretary. And Tariq Aziz is, of course, still in jail. And Badi Arif Azat recently was flown out of the country of Iraq because he actually came to odds with the judge, the prosecuting judge in a trial against the Anfal team, the people responsible for gassing the Kurds in 1988. And he was basically whisked out. This is a very interesting story. He was taken out of the country by the U.S. military because the court was trying to accuse him that people in Saddam Hussein's regime were responsible for gassing the Kurds. And he was saying the opposite. He was saying, no, actually, it was elements from Iran who were responsible for doing it. And he basically spoke of the great disparity now between the Iraqi government and the U.S. military in Iraq, that essentially there's a conflict going on there, and the government is basically falling out of, even the puppet government is falling out of control of the U.S. military there.
Okay, well, let's stick with the senior Ba'ath Party that you, I may have gotten both interviews mixed up, with the senior Ba'ath Party member that you interviewed. You left his name out. Is there a reason for that?
Yes, it's because he is in, he is in exile in Damascus, Syria, along with so many other Ba'ath Party members that it's simply not safe for them to remain in Iraq. So they're in Syria or other neighboring countries and basically working from outside the country. They are very much connected with the Iraqi resistance, and it was simply a situation where it's too dangerous for him to have his name being used in an interview to be broadcast and to be written in public. So it was one of the conditions of the interview for his own personal safety, as he explained to me, that we'd conduct the interview but just simply not use his name.
Is he one of the 52 that were on the deck of cards?
No, he's not.
Okay. So what was his position with the Ba'ath Party?
He is a senior. He was not a direct member in Saddam Hussein's regime, but he is a high-ranking member in the Ba'ath Party. I mean, keeping in mind the Ba'ath Party is very, very large. It encompasses people not just within Iraq, but people in Syria and some of the other neighboring countries as well. There's plenty of members running around in Amman, Jordan these days also. But he is a senior spokesman for the group, although he has decided to stop using his name relating to the media since the former regime was removed from power.
Okay. So now you asked him about the resistance in Iraq, and his answer was that it was mainly the former military, former Saddam's military guys?
Yes, at least under their control, the Ba'ath Party is still part of the organizational structure of what is most likely the largest percentage of the actual fighters on the ground carrying out the attacks against occupation forces. And he said that there's very much a command structure in place. It's very organized. That's why they're able to keep adjusting their tactics to stay a couple of steps ahead of the U.S. military there. And plus, these are seasoned fighters. These are people from the Iraqi military. Many of them fought many years in the very brutal war between Iraq and Iran, and they're still very much, of course, trained and active on the ground. And he also discussed the fact that arms and money. I asked him, well, how are they getting the weaponry that they need, and how are they staying funded? Because this takes a lot of money to run a resistance campaign like this.
Was my next question to you, yes.
Right, and he simply said that there are enough arms already in Iraq, even if none were shipped in whatsoever from the border from any of the neighboring countries, that there were enough arms in Iraq for them to continue fighting on for another 50 years. And as far as money, he said that something that I would think is not entirely true, but he said that, well, there's enough money in Iraq, it's a rich country, that they're able to fund it from within Iraq. But I have other sources that say there's actually plenty of funding coming in from just about every country that's neighboring Iraq, and even particularly countries like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and many of the Gulf states that don't directly border Iraq. But there's much money from people, usually private groups in those countries, that are helping fund the resistance as well.
What is their relationship to Al-Qaeda, for instance? Are they friendly with those guys, or is there problems between those two?
No, they have absolutely no relationship to Al-Qaeda or any other foreign terrorist group in Iraq. They do not carry out any attacks whatsoever on civilians. He explained that to me very clearly, and they are very much opposed to Al-Qaeda and other foreigners. As he explained, that this is an Iraqi resistance. They are concerned with fighting against all foreigners within their country. So not just occupation forces, but that would include them going into combat against Al-Qaeda or other people coming from outside of Iraq to try to establish a foothold of power. So they're according to the spokesman, they had absolutely no affiliation and were very much opposed to Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
Are they the idea of the United States actually engaging them in some type of political dialogue? Are they receptive to that idea?
They are receptive to it. He made it very clear that they had said that these are the terms, that they're not open for negotiation, and some of their terms were immediate unconditional withdrawal, full reparations being paid, and there were several other criteria that he mentioned, but those first two right there have made the Bush administration not only reluctant to talk to them, but just completely refused to talk to them. And he said, I asked him point blank, I said, well, people like ex-Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and others within the administration have said that they have made the claim that they've been in talks with the Iraqi resistance. And he said that is simply not true. They have never been willing to talk with them because their terms of the U.S. withdrawal are not up for negotiation.
Now, one of the conditions that he put was that all parts of the Iraqi resistance should be the exclusive representative for Iraqis. Is he talking about Sunnis, Shiites? Is he talking about everybody? What happens with the Maliki government here? Is he pushing it aside? Tell me about that.
Yes, he's very much pushing the Maliki government aside because by international law, as he told me, and as is fact, actually, by international law, any laws or governments or treaties set up in a country while it's under a foreign military occupation are their violation of international law. It's not legal to do that. So part of the U.S. withdrawal would be an immediate dissolving of the current government, of all laws made and treaties made in Iraq under U.S. occupation. All of that would be rendered null and void. So this government would absolutely have no legitimacy whatsoever, and the parts of the resistance would be able to stand up and take the helm.
Okay. Daher, stay with me. We're going to take a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, you can call in 800-313-9443. We will be right back.
This Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's primary source for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit coredocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
From the Republic Broadcasting Network. For a second there, I forgot where I was. And we are speaking live from Beirut, Lebanon, with Daher Jamel, one of the greatest reporters who covered the Iraqi war, or the war on Iraq, especially the battle for Fallujah. You can go on his website, Daher Jamel. Give me the email address, Daher.
Actually, we have a short version now. It's simply dar.org. It's dahr.org.
Very good. Thanks. And, Daher, we're going to go to some callers, but before we go there, I have a question for you. Even if the Bush administration says yes to all these demands and we are going to leave Iraq, you have the Shiites there, you have the Sunnis, you have the foreigners that you call, you know, Al-Qaeda and probably other groups. Then you have the Kurds. If the United States leave, is that going to be a better situation for everybody there?
It absolutely would, because it's a misnomer to think that if the U.S. pulls out, that all of the different groups in Iraq will go at each other. Without a doubt, there would be continued instability and chaos and some violence, but I would argue that the leading cause of sectarianism and division and chaos in Iraq today are the U.S. military and many of the dirty tactics that they've been using to divide and conquer the society itself. And if you take the occupation out of Iraq, Iraqis are more than capable of pulling things together and having their own representative government elected from their own people without outside interests being involved in causing the chaos and destruction that we've seen going on from day one of the occupation.
What is the Islamic State of Iraq? What is that?
This is a part of the resistance. I wouldn't say it's a majority part of the resistance, but it is a group of several different cells of fighters going against the occupation that are interested in starting a fundamentalist state in Iraq. And again, this is not the brunt of the resistance. This is the type of group that the main Iraqi resistance itself, the one we were talking about earlier, would be very capable and efficient in expelling from Iraq, given time and given the opportunity, because even the U.S. military, as they document regularly instances of the Iraqi resistance fighting against some of these foreign elements or these fundamentalist elements in Iraq, they simply won't let them get the job done, nor will they really go after these groups themselves, because they can't even provide security for themselves. And this is just one example of the type of group that would be expelled, and I would argue a relatively short amount of time once the occupation was ended.
Very good. Let's go to Chicago with Chris. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, I have a couple questions about the Baathists and also about Lebanon, if I may.
Sure, go ahead.
My understanding is that the Baathists are secular Arab nationalists, which makes them chiefly Sunni and pits them against the Shia, who tend to be theocratic and Persian. Is that correct?
Well, actually, that's not entirely correct. Two of the three founding members of the Ba'ath Party were Shia. In fact, the man that we were talking about, who I had interviewed at the first part of the program, he himself was Shia, and a large percentage of the Ba'ath Party are Shia. It's really not it doesn't lean more to one particular side of Islam than the other. It is secular. There are many Sunni members. There are many Shia members. And then ethnically, there's also a Kurdish presence within the Ba'ath Party. You are exactly right. It is a pan-Arab, primarily secular party, but it really doesn't favor one or the other sex. It does include Christians as well. As we discussed earlier, Tariq Aziz is part of that also.
It's much stronger in Syria than it is in Saudi Arabia. Isn't that true?
That's exactly correct.
So what are the hopes that the Baathists could lead a pan-Arab federation or some kind of unified Arab movement to counter the Zionist attacks that they face?
Well, that is without a doubt their goal. I think now there's so much chaos and so much foreign military presence throughout the Middle East at this point that the odds of that happening are quite slim. They're about the same as the odds of the Kurds realizing a greater Kurdistan and you know, basically having the north of Iraq go independent as part of that, making that happen. It's just not going to happen. That is their goal. I know so many people that are in favor of a pan-Arab nation state where that would unite them, but and particularly to combat the Zionist goals in the region. But as I said, with the U.S. presence, the size of these bases, not just in Iraq, but in other places like in Kuwait and Jordan and Israel itself, would be a quite limiting factor in the realization of the Baathist dream.
Very good. We coming shortly on a break. Chris, you said you have a question about Lebanon. Let's hold it till after the break. And when we come back, we welcome your phone calls. The number to call is 800-313-9443 if you have a question for Daher. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. The J. Michael Stevens Group is shipping a lot of storable food. It's smart that you're getting going at your food supplies. 1 week after the report came out that the world had eaten more food than it produced last year, the country turned into a deep freeze, wiping out a huge part of the new crop. An example? In 24 hours, clementine oranges doubled in price. If you intend to start or finish your supply, call immediately. When you call, tell them how many adults and how many years of food you need. When there are shortages, missing items will be substituted, maintaining the quantity of food necessary. Money is not the problem. Availability is. Be careful. When food supplies get short, with no future, many retailers ship real trash to supply you. For safe food you can trust, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com, 800-409-5633.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming to you live from the Republic Broadcasting Network, and we are speaking with Daher Jamel from Beirut, Lebanon. And we have on the line Chris. Chris, you had a question about Lebanon?
Yes. Olmert made a vastly important admission recently that the attack on Lebanon was planned well in advance to fit the model of the Gaza incursion following the capture of IDF soldiers. And the whole thing looks as if it was a setup waiting for a pretext. And I'm wondering why that hasn't received as much coverage as it deserves, and if there's anticipation in Lebanon that when the Winograd Commission reports are filed, that all this will come out in its fullest context. And are they planning to instigate war crimes prosecutions and demand reparations? Because this was obviously a criminal conspiracy that was planned in advance.
Well, that's a very important point, and I would, of course, agree the facts are there. We have admissions coming not just from Olmert, but even documented proof that Cheney was heavily involved in the planning of this war for very far in advance of it occurring. And, as far as the coverage of this, of course, it's not surprising to me whatsoever that, like the war itself, the horribly biased coverage towards the state of Israel and the Likudniks and the regime and Olmert and all of his minions that were involved in making the war happen, portraying Israel as the victim and just defending itself and all of this nonsense when it was one of the most blatant wars of aggression we've had in the Middle East in a long time, since Iraq, I suppose. But really, here on the ground in Lebanon, we have groups, even people, high-ranking people within the government itself that are very much. And in fact, yesterday I interviewed the president of Lebanon, Amil Lahoud, and he's very interested in prosecuting people responsible in Israel for the war, for the war crimes, which they're certainly responsible, and including their shameless backers, people in the Bush administration, Bush himself, Cheney, many of the neocons themselves. So even high up within the Lebanese government, those that aren't already pawns of the Bush administration and acting on those outside interests, the president would be one of the exceptions, that he is someone that is with the opposition to his own government, because it's a very corrupt government being controlled right now primarily by outside interests, namely the United States and Israel and Saudi Arabia and France as well. And if he had his way, if Amil Lahoud, the president, had his way, without a doubt, these individuals responsible would be prosecuted for war crimes. And needless to say, it's safe to say that over half, conservatively, I would say over half of the population of Lebanon would, of course, be very much in support of that as well.
A couple of follow-up questions. The prime minister, Fouad Sanyora, appears to be a puppet of foreign interests. And I'm wondering what the trust level among Lebanese themselves is of Sanyora, of Hassan Nasrallah, and of Amil Lahoud, and what will come of the Hariri investigations. And I assume that Lahoud is still backing Syria on that.
Well, you're correct in your estimations. Lahoud would deny having links with Syria. He's trying to distance himself from his past. Of course, it's going to be a very difficult thing for him to do. He would deny those links. I'm not real sure how he's going to come out on the Hariri investigation regarding Syria, but he is very much into having a independent trial and an independent investigation rather than the way that it's currently being set up by people like Sanyora and his direct backers. You know, one thing about Sanyora, of course, that it sounds like you're acutely aware of this, but, and certainly most people in Lebanon are, but most people in U.S. don't understand the impact and the symbolism it had when Condoleezza Rice came here in the middle of the war, which U.S. was not just backing, but pushing along the best they could. And Condoleezza Rice comes here, and there's this infamous picture of her giving a big hug and to Prime Minister Sanyora, and him welcoming her into the parliament and into his offices while his country was being bombed, primarily because of Rice making this possible. And that's not lost on people here whatsoever. And Sanyora has no respect of the people, neither does Saad Hariri, Rafiq Hariri's son, who is in a very big position of power in the government, and others in this so-called March 14 group, which is basically the right-wing, more neocon-esque people within the Lebanese government, backed by the countries I mentioned earlier, primarily the United States, Saudi Arabia, France, just to name a few. And they're not acting in the interest of the Lebanese people. They're acting in corporate interests. And it's another case, much like the situation in our own country, the United States. We have an elitist corporate-backed group fundamentalist types that are in control of the government. They're not acting with respect to the wishes of the people, and that's not lost on people here. But there is an ongoing sit-in around the parliament buildings in downtown Beirut. There's a very powerful opposition. Hassan Nasrallah is really the spearhead of that opposition, and he has more respect now amongst these opposition groups. 50% of the opposition groups are Christian, many of them Maronite Christians. And then we have Hassan Nasrallah and Hezbollah, which are, of course, Shia. But they're all coming together now to form this opposition. And it's a very important point. I'm glad you're bringing this up, because back in the United States, it's being portrayed as though, well, Hezbollah and the Shia and these radical this radical group, which they're really not, are the opposition, and it's simply not true. 50% of the opposition are Maronite Christians. Emil Lahoud, as president, is also a part of that opposition.
Is Senora and the Hariri family in any way attempting to profiteer off of the war with lucrative rebuilding contracts? I know that the Hariri, who was assassinated, was fabulously wealthy and was in the construction business, and Senora is himself a banker.
Well, you're exactly right. In fact, Hariri, after he was assassinated, of course, a vast amount of his wealth went to his son, Saad. And last year, in 2006, Saad Hariri was listed by Forbes magazine as one of the richest men in the world. And it is from Saudi businesses. And then, of course, we have Signore and his banking guys. And what is happening for sure is, you know, just this past January, we had the meetings in Paris, and over $7 billion of aid was pledged in loans. Was pledged to help rebuild Lebanon, and of course this is all being filtered directly through the Signora government. And what we're seeing on the ground, and I actually was in southern Beirut, which was bombed so heavily during the war, I was there today, and what everyone's complaining about there is what they're complaining about in southern Lebanon when I was there just a few days ago, and that's that the government is doing nothing. We know that they've been given all of these billions of dollars, and we're seeing nothing. Instead, we know that friends of Hariri and Senora and other people in that coalition of the government are profiting. Paybacks are being made, and Senora and Hariri themselves are being accused of keeping a lot of this money. It's not getting to where it's supposed to go on the ground to help the people most in need. So without a doubt, that's another important point. You're exactly right.
Just one quick little thing.
Thank you, Chris, for the call. We're going to have to move on.
Okay.
Daher, I'm going to ask you a quick question about Lebanon, and then we're going to get back to Iraq. Now, reports came out that France, who at the time looked as it was on Lebanon's side and wanted Israel to stop, but in fact, reports came out that President Chirac asked Israel to continue and to even go after Syria. How true these reports are, in your opinion?
This is true. I have had word of that would verify that on the ground. France is very much in a position now where they're closely allied with U.S. and Israeli goals for what they want to see happen on the ground here in Lebanon. It's not an accident that the funding group in January that I just spoke of in response to Chris's question did occur in Paris. Jacques Chirac basically was running around acting like a spokesman for these aid groups. His country, one of the biggest donors into Lebanon, and it's basically payback. It's basically funneling money into the country to go to the people that are going to carry out your agenda here. And these are the right-wing conservative with corporate interests in the government, the people we've been talking about the last 10, 15 minutes, the Senoras, the Hariris, Jim Blatt, for whatever reason, has allied himself with these people as well, and then all of their backers and the government. And again, it represents a very small percentage of the Lebanese population, just corporate backers, and it's the majority of the people that don't have representation of the government and, of course, are not getting any of the help that they so desperately need. But without a doubt, France is a very key player in this equation.
Okay. Going back to Iraq, you mentioned that the Ba'ath Party, which is the majority of the resistance, apparently is under its command and control, and it does have not just Sunnis, but actually Shiites too. Are the Shiites split in Iraq? Do we have Shiites that are pro-Arab or Arab nationalism and Shiites who are pro-Iran?
Without a doubt. The situation in Iraq, it's unlike how it's portrayed in the corporate media in the U.S., there's not a good guy and a bad guy. There's not a right or a wrong. There are so many different groups and then so many different factions within those groups, and some of them are allied and some of them are against each other. But one clear example was a story that I reported on via some contacts of mine in Iraq, was that down in Basra there's actually two large components of the Shia coalition which split apart and are now battling against each other, primarily for control of parts of Basra. And that is Muqtada al-Sadr. We've all heard of him. Who's the Shia cleric who does have ties to Iran and is very much in support of that regime, as well as taking orders from them inside of Iraq. And is while on one hand he'll speak about a national unified Iraq, on another hand he's using Iranian support to go after some of the Sunni resistance and groups inside of Iraq. And then on another hand, we have another Shia party called the Al-Fadila Party, which withdrew from the government in protest just this past March because they said they don't want to be part of a government that's only operates on sectarianism. Instead, they were more interested in maybe teaming up with some of the Sunni groups that really are into a unified Iraq and more nationalistic, as opposed to acting on outside interests. So that's just one example of, even within the Shia party, we have things kind of disintegrating and factions starting to go at one another.
So when you said Muqtada al-Sadr has ties to Iran, the Shiites that have ties to Iran, is that an ethnic connection there, ethnic ties? Or, I mean, are all Shiites in Iraq are Arabs?
No, it's more religious ties. It would depend on which part of the Shiism they are following that's more closely allied to Iran. That's a very fundamental way to put it. I don't have off the top of my head the names of the certain ayatollahs which Shia groups would follow more than the others. But of course, the most direct tie I would point to as far as Shias and Shia clerics specifically inside of Iraq would be Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, who is basically the religious figure of the Skiri group in the government of Iraq, the Skiri being Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq. And Grand Ayatollah Sistani himself is from Iran. He was born in Iran, and he moved to Najaf to continue on in religious school there in 1953, where he's lived since. But he still speaks Persian. He does speak just a little bit of Arabic, but even with a very heavy Persian accent. And he has very, very much control religiously and therefore politically inside of Iraq. And, of course, he himself is Iranian-born and is still very, very close to Iran. So that would be one example.
What would you say, like, the number of Shiites that are aligned with Iran? Would you say, like, the Shiites are split 50-50 as far as that goes?
I would have to guess, but it's tough to say, but I would say it's a little bit more of a majority that would have closer links with Iran, getting support from Iran, having more political affiliation and religious affiliation with groups inside of Iran. I would say that within Iraq that there would be the majority. I would say it would be probably at least 60%.
60% of Shiites or 60% of the population?
60% of the Shiites.
Okay. Now, the senior Ba'ath Party that you interviewed, he did say that it's not only the Americans that they are after to leave Iraq, but also everybody else, including Iran. How deep is Iran into this conflict? Do they have troops in the ground?
They don't have their own physical Republican Army troops on the ground, but they are basically the Badr Corps, which is the armed wing of Skiri, of Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq. Their armed wing is the Badr organization, and this is an Iranian bred, born, armed, funded militia that came into Iraq. They couldn't come into Iraq when Saddam Hussein was in charge. One thing you have with a dictator is you tend to have good security and very tight borders. So they were never able to enter into Iraq or stay for any amount of time when Saddam Hussein was in power. But when the borders collapsed, when his regime collapsed with the American invasion and occupation, the Badr organization immediately came into southern Iraq, and then I even saw them personally on the streets of Baghdad at times. And they still have a very powerful presence now across large parts of southern Iraq. So in that way, Iran does kind of have a proxy army, if you will, in Iraq. It's not a large number. I think the maximum number we have in the Badr organization is about 30,000 men. But aside from that, too, we do have the affiliation with Muqtada al-Sadr. It was Muqtada al-Sadr who announced from Tehran about a year ago, when there was a lot of the saber rattling from the United States towards Iran, and Muqtada al-Sadr announced from Tehran, he said, any attack on Iran would be an attack on us as well, and we would respond in due fashion. And so that is a very large militia there of Muqtada al-Sadr that would be affiliated with Iran as well.
Very good. Dahir, stay with me. We have probably about 8 minutes left. After the break, I'm going to ask you about the Iranian threat, or supposedly threat, to states like Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and the other Arab countries. We'll be right back.
All right, employees, listen up. Our group health insurance premium just went up again. In fact, it's doubled in the last 4 years, and now we've been forced to try something new. So we're increasing the annual deductible from $500 to $2,500. Okay, cut the moaning. The good news is you'll all still only have to pay your regular $500 deductible. The company is installing a new health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA plan, that will pay up to $2,000 in benefits only to those employees who have deductible expenses. This new HRA plan is saving us a lot of money.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes 4 books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the Task Force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, "A penny saved is a penny earned." By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are,
call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
Live from the Republic Broadcasting Network, and we are speaking with Daher Jamel directly from Beirut, Lebanon. I want you to, ladies and gentlemen, stay to the next hour. I'm going to be speaking with Professor Kevin Barrett, who's one of our own here at RBN. He has the Jihad Radio. He's a bounty hunter now who wants to go to Morocco and try to get Walid al-Shahiri, who supposedly died in Flight 11, that basically the 9/11 Commission told us that he was on the plane that went into one of those towers. Daher, one thing that is happening now, we have an environment or a situation or a condition, whatever you like to call it, where the Iranian threat is more and more visible, at least in the minds of those countries around Iraq, and a situation that is taking place now where Israel, as a matter of fact, is becoming appealing to some of these regimes there in the Middle East, where we have created a situation where Israel is the enemy of Iran. And, of course, some of these Arab states think that Iran is also their enemies. So the enemy of my friend, of my enemy is my friend. Are we seeing a real problem there in the Middle East where some of these Arab states might be getting closer and closer to Israel? King Abdullah said a few days ago, well, he did not say a few days ago, but Haaretz reported that he said that now we are facing the same enemy, speaking of the Arabs and the Israelis. And then I've heard report that they denied that he said that. Tell me about that situation there. Are the Arab states getting closer to Israel?
Well, I think we have to make a very, very clear distinction that we have a situation in all of the Arab countries here in the Middle East that's very similar to ours in the United States, and that is that there are governments that are acting on their own and are not representative of the population, or at least the vast majority of the populations. I mean, if we look at Jordan, which is 70% Palestinian, and we have King Abdullah, who's yet another U.S. pawn, who only inherited his throne from because he was born of his father, who was also the king. We have Mubarak in Egypt, who's another U.S. pawn, who is not acting in the interest of the population. Because the reality is all of the populations of these countries are very much opposed to the state of Israel. They're very much also opposed to any another attack on a country in the Middle East, i.e. Iran. It's the governments that are bought and paid for by the United States. So that includes Jordan, that includes Kuwait, that includes Egypt, and then we can go on down and list off a few of the Gulf states as well, that their governments, once again, are very tied and dependent upon to the United States government, and i.e., therefore, Israel by default. And these governments are not acting in the interests of their people, because I can guarantee you that the majority of the people in these countries would not be friends with Israel.
Very good, Daher. I just have time to say thank you. It was an honor having you on the program, and hopefully we'll have you on the TV show once you get back home. Thank you, sir.
All right, thanks very much.
Thanks. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we will be back in about a minute or so with Kevin Barrett. We'll see you then.